apply the process and trust the process, mm-hmm. first of all. And so the biggest challenge really is this mindset, because it's a different way of looking at the problems. It doesn't go far enough to show how you bring the voice of customer in. I suddenly saw it making sense.
Welcome to the Productize Podcasts. Series of interviews with product innovators, successful makers, entrepreneurs. Our goal is to inspire listeners and now viewers by sharing insights from leaders in the field. Remember to visit our website at productize.co and subscribe to our newsletter to stay informed. Today, my guest is Marta Oliveira. She's the Chief Product Officer at Cofidis Portugal. And Marta has significantly contributed to advancing customer-centric strategies that bolster the competitiveness and customer loyalty at Cofidis Portugal. Her work has received recognition, and her wide-ranging background profoundly influences her approach to management, service design, and operational excellence. Let me also tell you that Cofidis Portugal is the main sponsor through the Next by Cofidis program. It's an innovation program launched by Cofidis Portugal 1 year ago. And they're going to be with us for Productize Conference 2024 and Productize Conference 2025, which is going to be our 10th edition. Cofidis Portugal is the leading financial services company in the Portuguese market. They first started operations in 1996 here. And since then, they have been leading by developing in-store partnerships and establishing their presence in the vehicle financing market, among other markets. Welcome to the Productize Podcast, Marta.
Thank you, André.
Thanks. Really nice to have this conversation in this podcast format. We have had lots of conversations in other forums and also one-on-ones, but you know, I think this is the first time we do it in this way.
Yeah, it is.
It is, right. Okay, so you've played a pivotal role in shaping the customer experience strategies in financial sector, specifically now developing the Cofidis customer-centric management practices. And this journey is particularly challenging in an industry that is often criticized by adapting slowly to customer needs. I don't want to be unfair to say that financial services and banks score relatively low. I got some benchmark numbers on internet and around 75%. And just to reference people listening to the podcast, so CSAT, customer satisfaction, is a metric that you get when you divide the total number of customers who are either very satisfied or satisfied, which is usually a 5 or 4, right, by the total number of responses. So what do you think this is historically, or has historically been the case, CSAT in this sector being relatively low?
I think that's a really keen observation. And in the truth is that there is a really wide range of performance of customer experience in the financial services industry. And that's really clear when you look at benchmark studies like Bain & Co.'s NPS Prism, where they look at NPS across industries. And there you can see that financial services or consumer banking in the US ranks between an NPS of 2 and 60. So you have a really wide range. And NPS also measures customer satisfaction, but what it does is ask customers would recommend the company to friends or family. And as long as you score between 0 and 10, 9 and 10, then you are a promoter. And the point scale goes from -100 to 100. And when you see that financial services companies in the US range from 2 to 60, that means you've got almost no promoters at all, right, to a good amount of promoters. So what you have is a really wide range. And I think that really shows and mirrors the challenges in a financial services industry. Financial services have been around in our economies for a long time. It's one of these services that has accompanied us in modern world since we've started having modern contact centers and started to digitize. So the first companies who were really pushing the envelope in technology were financial services companies so that they could power economies.
Absolutely.
But what that means is that nowadays, You have a lot of really big banks running on technology that is very old, that have long processes that have been the same for many years or are hard to change. Mm-hmm. Many of them have a lot of branches and a lot of people that are hard to manage and align all with the same practice and purpose. Mm-hmm. And that creates some really interesting challenges for the financial services industry, which means that it's quite hard to sometimes get everyone along and focusing on the customer in the same way. You're talking about lots of different channels and different types of life challenges as well. You're talking about from credit cards to mm-hmm. a loan for your house. Right. So you're talking about big complexity in products, and as that's just really hard to manage. Mm-hmm. It's a big challenge. And we start seeing startups in the field starting to challenge the incumbents with new ways of working, right. new ways of relating to customers.
Neobanks and all
absolutely.
That stuff.
And you start seeing some really interesting changes and challenges to the incumbents.
So you told me the other day when we were preparing for this conversation that you think Cofidis or Cofidis is not really a financial service company. It's a tech company.
Yeah.
Why is that?
Well, okay, our core and our mission and the way that we interact with our market and our customers is through financial services. So we have a belief and our purpose and our reason for being in the market is to make people's lives better through their financial life. That is the reason why we're here. But the way that we are able to have more impact in people's lives is through digital channels. And this is, I'm talking about how we interact with customers, but also technology powers superior customer experience, faster processes, safer processes. So actually, if we need to think about the kind of business we're in, we're actually in the technology business. Mm-hmm. We need to look at ourselves as a technology company in order for us to really advance in the elements that are going to make a difference in our customer's life, and so that we can stick true to our purpose, which is to improve people's financial life.
All right, so let's take the segue of purpose. Before we actually dive deeper into this conversation, you have multicultural biography yourself. You are half Portuguese, half Finnish. How does that shape your way of thinking? Because I guess Portuguese and Finnish are very different kind of brains, right? Very different kind of reasoning, very different kind of culture. They are on extreme sides of Europe. So what do you think about that upbringing?
I think you've hit the nail on the head. I mean, definitely very diverse cultures.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'd never lived in Finland. I spent many months often in every summer in Finland when I was growing up. So I got quite a lot of exposure anyway without living in Finland.
But you do speak the language.
I do speak the language. My mom always spoke Finnish with me.
Okay, which is enough to shape your
that
brain.
Often that is true. Languages do shape how we think
exactly.
as well. And my mother is a very strong-willed person, so she also passed a lot of Finnish ways of thinking and doing things to me as well. And I'd say that one of the biggest impacts has been when I look at my life and try to think about what has my dual nationality brought to me, I'd say open-mindedness and ability to adapt. Because as you say, Portuguese and Finnish cultures are really diverse, very different from really core things like the religions that underpin the cultures of the country to just how the day-to-day works. I have to say that I've been very inspired by the Finnish state, its organization, its welfare state, how it thinks and things through for the best of its people, and also how design plays a really important role in Finnish lives in a different way than design does in Portuguese people's lives.
And Latin cultures in general. So was that the inspiration to pursue a career in design in the first place? Because that's your background. You have a background in design and service design.
Yeah.
Thinking.
That definitely played a role. So I started off studying management, doing a master's in marketing, and always having this passion for design from Finland. Just the amazing designers and architects just really inspired me to think about the systems of buildings and big public spaces. How do they work? I even wanted to study architecture for a while because I'm just really passionate about how you need to match so many needs in one space, and one space needs to enable so many experiences. From emotional to really transactional and operational things. And when I was doing my exchange in Holland, in University of Maastricht, I was working in a consulting company that paired together students, academics, and professionals. And the methodology that they used there was service design.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my aha moment.
Okay.
That's the first time that I saw how you can really put customer at the heart of what you do as a business,
mm-hmm.
and how you can do that to build this empathy, and how you do that using design methods. And that really spoke to me.
So-called
because
human-centered.
Design focus, or the inspiration of design in my upbringing, this, I suddenly saw it making sense.
Mm-hmm.
So it fit in an emotional way, but also in a really functional way. So for companies exist to serve customers, then how do you put customers in the center? I'd always heard that in all my academic studies, but now I saw how you do it.
And that's a lot of what I've been hearing inside Coffeedish, how to put the customer at the center and make it more, even more customer-centric. So why do you think that customer centricity is so vital in financial services? Because when you look at the numbers, and you guys were showing the numbers on our latest productized talks, there was this obvious correlation of higher customer satisfaction, higher NPS, and better results on the bottom line. So how does it contribute to the in this case, to Coffeedish competitiveness, the customer centricity approach?
I'd say that customer centricity is essential in any industry that where you don't have a monopoly. I'd say as an ethics thing, you need to do it everywhere.
Competition, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
So even in industries where you have a monopoly, I think for the ethics of what you're doing, it's important to focus on the customers.
Yeah.
But for business for sure. purposes, when you're thinking about when do you have a motivation for it, when you have competition, knowing who your customers are, and customers in the broad sense, sometimes you don't just have the end user, you've got a whole chain of different types of customers in different parts of your businesses, it's important to focus on the customer. In financial services specifically, I think that the focus on customer, exactly for the first question you asked me about why is it the financial services have such a challenge with customer experience, or you have such broad range of experiences with customers in the financial services industry.
Mm-hmm.
I think the fact that you are an industry that's been around for centuries, many organizations, modern organizations today, have been around for almost 100 years.
Yeah.
You need, in order to make a change and to make sure that you are really being competitive as an organization, you need to look at the people who are paying and contributing to your net banking revenue. And in order to do that, you need to know who your customers are, and you need to align the whole business around these customer needs.
Right, the customer needs. Can we be specific? Can you share a case where focusing on customer experience led to noticeable, measurable improvements at Coffeedish?
Yes, I can. So when I started in Coffeedish in 2020, one of the first things me and a group of people who were really crazy for customer experience, we sat down and we said, okay, we really need...
Who are these people? Are they still in the company?
They are still in the company, okay. Actually. I did this with two other CX mavericks at Coffeedish, so Sandra Canelo and Isabel Machado.
Okay.
We sat down and we thought, okay, let's map out our customer experience vision.
Mm-hmm.
And this is now, to be fair, Coffeedish has always put the customer at the heart, and it's been really important for us. So I've come in and I've helped us along the journey. But it's been something, and that's what attracted me to Coffeedish Portugal, is that customers were at the heart of what we do since the moment we existed. So finding these CX mavericks wasn't hard, and we worked on and built on who the company is, who our customers are. Based on customer research and interaction with customers, we mapped out our vision, and then we started implementing it and using it in our work. And a really good example is in our loan application process.
Mm-hmm.
So our vision, without giving it all out and being brief, there are three key elements to this vision. We want to be convenient or have a convenient experience. We want to give control to customers and help them feel like they're in control of their financial lives and support them. And through all of this, bring peace of mind.
Right. Convenience, control, and peace of mind.
Absolutely. And so one of the first things we did with that is in the loan application process, work in our website and the experience of doing a loan application with autonomy, so in self-serve methodology without having to speak with someone, how do you make a loan application process? And by using this focus on the customer, we had designers also working in this challenge. We used modern product management methodologies to apply this vision of being focused on giving customers the power to do the loan application process themselves on their terms and their timing, mm-hmm. and working through the whole journey in detail, we were able to have some really interesting inputs. I mean, I'm not going to talk about how much we're able to finance through it because that was definitely also an impact, but to talk really about customer experience KPIs, I would focus on two. First of all, NPS, and second, on the smoothness of the experience, which we can measure by the number of contacts we get per loan application.
Right. So that they were reduced.
They went in different directions. Right. So the NPS went up by almost 10 points from 1 year to the next, where we focused on giving autonomy to our customers. And we saw that our customer contacts reduced by 40%, which clearly meant that we were having the experience that made sense to them and that was convenient and they felt in control.
Increases the operational efficiency of the company, right?
Absolutely. All aligned. And the year after, our focus was we stabilized our self-serve tool. Mm-hmm. So now let's focus on the experience that customers are having with our contact center, because some of them are still contacting us. We're still having about 55% of our customers who made a loan application were contacting. So we reduced it over 1 year to about 25% by working with our frontline teams and helping them be more supportive. And how do they explain things to customers and explain them the process, what to expect. Mm-hmm. And we're again able to improve our NPS by another almost 10 points and again reduce our customer contacts by another 40%.
Okay. I guess the challenge is going to be harder and harder as you approach.
Absolutely.
Very high levels of NPS, so it's maybe about sustaining those levels and keep, you know, it's like a high performance athlete, right? You cannot low hanging fruit is gone. So what advice would you give other organizations looking to embark on a similar path towards customer centricity? And maybe let's go back 5 or 6 years when you joined Cofidis, 4 years ago. So let's go back 4 years ago, you were starting. So what would you advise the Marta of the past, right? There's lots of Marta, maybe Martas out there or you know, Johns or Joels or whatever they're named, listening to this, maybe facing the same challenges. What should they focus on first?
I think, first of all, you need to know you have buy-in from the top. Hmm. So from the CEO to the executive board, there is a commitment to customer experience and not just lip service. You need to have the board ready to commit money and make tough decisions based on that.
Ready to commit the moment you get into the company, or ready to commit means you have to evangelize inside the company for a while?
It depends what kind of company you're in or what state of maturity for customer experience you're in. So in the case of Cofidis, I chose to go into Cofidis because the executive board was already aligned around customer experience. That was a personal decision that I made about the kind of company I wanted to work for. But anybody who is in an organization and would like to make sure the company works customer experience in a meaningful way, one of the first things you need to have is buy-in from the top. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have it, you definitely need to evangelize and work through this in the board. Mm.
All right. So that's very important, having buy-in from the top. Let's keep that in mind, because I want now to talk a little bit about the role of design thinking in operational excellence. What challenges have you encountered in integrating design thinking into organizational process, and how did you overcome them? I guess you had this trio, this group of mavericks that you talk about. There were obviously allies, but you know, you had to integrate the number of design practices into the org. And maybe the org, at least 4 or 5 years ago, was not as ready as it is now, at least to the best of my knowledge.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, we've definitely grown as an organization. And I'd say that, first of all, having this buy-in from the board is key. And I had many allies in the board around customer experience. João Freitas is one of them. Benjamin Simon is another one. Claudio Pimentel also has accompanied this the whole way. And that was a key point, because design thinking, I think there's a couple challenges to it and bringing it into an operational context. The first one is that when you think of design, often people think of graphic design.
Right.
So what color is a button, what size, what shape, and really design can be that, but it's so much more. And so when you start talking to people about bringing design thinking into an operational context, the first thing is, whoa, what do you mean bringing graphic design into how we do operations? Okay. So there's that is a first shock you need to work through. And you don't actually work it through by sitting people down and talking to them what design is. You show them. Mm-hmm. But you need to be ready to know that you're going to have to do some eventually.
How do you show that?
I'm going to use a really concrete example. So design thinking is a great way to build empathy with a user of any experience or process. And we had a team of design working with our operational team, mapping out the processes. Nothing new for operational people. We map processes all the time. That's our bread and butter. What's different about the design way of mapping a process is that you are using service blueprinting, mm-hmm. where the starting point for mapping the customer experience is not your internal process, but the customer journey.
Right.
And then you're layering on top of that what the customer sees in the process, what parts of the process the customer is exposed to, and then you're adding on to that what's happening in the backstage, what are the systems doing. You're mapping the employee experience onto supporting the customer experience. Mm-hmm. And when we show this, and we showed this year to some of our operational managers, and one of them said, like, oh, I get it. Like, this is how design adds value to our operation. The aha moment for this one person in operations was, I get it now.
Right.
This is how you've actually pointed out some really key inefficiencies that we have. That when we use a methodology of just focusing on our processes, it seems like some really tiny things that we can just manage our day to day with. But when we layer it like this, and look at the experience from the customer's point of view, and we map in the employee experience in the process, suddenly we're able to show the impact of these small inefficiencies we thought we'd be able to live with. We just need to push through and work hard. Operations people are like that. Rain or shine, we make it happen. So this is what operations people have a spirit for. But when you're able to put it in the context of the impact it's having on customers, then that is really powerful. And so the biggest challenge really is this mindset, because it's a different way of looking at the problems. Lean talks a lot about the voice of customer, mm-hmm. but I feel like it doesn't go far enough to show how you bring the voice of customer in. Design thinking is a great way to really build through that and show to people who are in more of an operational mindset what it means that you need to listen to your customer and how you listen to the customer.
So how do you keep your product accurate to its core while adjusting to changes in customer preferences and technological advancements? In the conversation we had also before the podcast, you were mentioning this, you know, I would say very unique and original unified theory of customer experience and product, something like where Marta meets Marty. In this case, Marty Kagan. Can you elaborate on that idea of that the two fields can actually be integrated into this overall unifying theory?
Yeah, of course. So first of all, our focus when we're inside a company needs to be, how do we make the company better? How do we make the whole of the organization better and perform well? Our focus should not be, as product managers and product leaders, how do I make the digital part of the experience better?
Mm-hmm.
That's short-sighted. And customer experience is, and the practices of customer experience management are things that apply to the whole organization, from digital channels to human interactions. All the different products map in, here I'm talking in both digital and non-digital terms, they need to they map into the way that the customer experience happens in an organization. There are many models out there for managing customer experience and to explain what are the key practices and competencies of a company that is focused on the customer. I often guide myself by the Forrester model, and it posits that the first thing that you need is a customer experience strategy and a clear vision, and that guides all of your work. After that, you need to know the customer. How does a company create practices where you know the customer? And then you need to also be able to monitor the experience, the quality of the experience. You need to be able to prioritize your initiatives around the things that impact your customer experience and your vision for it and have the highest impact for it. You need to also be able to have processes and methods that help you put the customer at the heart of what you do and that guarantee that throughout the organization, you're designing experiences in a way that you're focused on the customer and deliver good outcomes for your customer. And finally, you need to also enable the whole organization on delivering this experience. And this might mean from training to frontline teams to training for operations staff on using lean methods or product management teams, making sure that they know they have the skills to do their work. And all of this is the culture of the organization. All these practices are the culture. And of course, there is more to culture. You've got the mindsets around the customer focus in the organization. So this is the big picture when I look at when we're managing customer experience in an organization. This is what we need to do if we're going to manage it well. It's really hard to do all these things. Mm-hmm. One of the tools that we have to do this in the digital world is our product management practices. And Marty Kagan has summarized the product operating model and many of the items, I'd say all the principles of the product operating model enable this customer experience management practice. So the way that you define your product strategy, how you empower your teams, how it is that you work through your discovery and delivery practices and how you implement them in the organization, as well as a product culture of experimentation and learning and adapting. All of these elements from the product operating model that Marty Kagan has summarized map into and are a way to be able to elevate a company's customer experience management practices. It looks at the digital side of it, so it's not everything that needs to be done, but it's definitely an important part of moving an organization forward in their customer experience management.
All right. So you talked about culture and that's obviously a very important part of the equation here. Part of the innovation equation is about empowering teams to be creative, to develop new ideas, especially when dealing with complex problems in a very heavily regulated sector like the financial sectors are. Financial sector is here in Europe. My question is, how is Cofidis actually working and how do you see it for the next, you know, for your tenure? You just started as a chief product officer at the company to be a more disruptive, innovative company and reinforcing now what will the company's new business model be for the next 3-5 years, right? Because there is disruption, you have the new banks, you have a number of other players in the market. And how do you see this integration or this creation of value being done, not just inside the company itself, but also with spin-offs or startups that the company might want to create in the future? And I know it's a very complex question, has lots of, you know, branches out, but, you know, let's maybe divide this into first. Disruptive innovation and reinforcing what is the core business model, but also understanding the number of initiatives that Cofidis is now launching in the market and how do you see those initiatives being new sources of revenue and new business models for the future, and then how to sustain those either inside the company or opening them to the world and maybe spinning off.
So as you said, taking it in chunks, the first one is how do we sustain our current business model and our current practices and make sure we keep on evolving in those?
Yeah, exactly.
And then the second part, how do we diversify and do things differently from that what we're doing today, and really start moving into to planes where we're not at the moment. So for the first part, it's going to sound repetitive, but I think, first of all, constraints are the bedrock of innovation. So if you don't have constraints, you normally, it's hard to be creative. Mm-hmm. So creativity comes from constraints. So having constraints, regulatory ones, and just business as usual constraints are a great way to build innovation in an organization and force people to be creative. That's the first point. Mm-hmm. I'd say also that finding ways to really get to know the customer and understand how what customer needs are within the very specific world of our products and our services, but also beyond in their financial life as a whole, that's key. One of the things we need to develop and improve, and I think we're getting a good start of it as an organization. We've got specialists that do this, pockets of parts of the organization that are very good at building empathy with customers and using a variety of different research methods to really be embedded in the customer's life, to be able to understand what we need to do differently and to build this empathy. But what we need to do is to build that across the organization and bring that practice to parts of the organization that normally wouldn't apply these methods.
What are you planning to do to encourage that that practice among the employees?
So thinking around product discovery practices, for example, there very specifically we're talking about developing methods internally, and methods, I'm not talking about new creative research methods. I'm talking about facilitating access to customers. So there is no excuse of it was hard to find people that it was hard to contact or find people available that were. No, we need to have methods internally that make it easy for us to reach out to customers in very specific situations to be able to find out what's working, what's not, and gain insight into it and facilitate the access of everyone to get into the customer's shoes. And this very specifically in a product discovery process. If we move into the operational world, which is where we started this conversation, there we need to train people in design thinking methodologies and show them ways for them to apply this human-centered design practice in their operational life and how they solve their operational problems. We've launched last year our operational leadership program in Coffee Dees, which aims at bringing in operational talent and developing our internal operational talent into a really world-class leaders in operations. And one of the modules that we have inside this operational leadership program is design thinking. And we're showing operational managers in practice, not just so they can see an initiative being used where we're using design thinking methods. We're talking about showing them the tools that we have in design thinking, explaining to them simply so they can apply it themselves as well. And that will help them be able to build this empathy with customers. So it depends what part of the business we're building this customer focus on as to being able to make sure that we keep on evolving and going beyond in our customer understanding, which is the essence for us to be able to continue to remain relevant and innovative in our field. When we talk about completely different either business models or diversifying the way we solve our customer problems, then we're talking about a different ballgame because we're moving away from business as usual and we're talking about experimenting things within the organization. We've tried lots of different ways of doing this. You were actually a part of creating a little lab in the organization where we were testing out and experimenting different business models throughout the year. And then we kept a couple that now we are nurturing and building.
Exactly. So Aalto is now being transformed. Lots of focus on the direct channel as well, and the so-called peer-to-peer.
We're testing out different facets of it, so we need to go by focus because now when we're talking about nurturing, we need to give things time to grow. We need to be realistic. When we're talking about a whole new service, we're not going to, in 1 year, have the kind of sales figures and adoption from customers that's going to be exciting for us. We need to give it time and nurture and build on it and see the signs that this is, build the conviction that this is something that works.
You have to be resilient towards failure, because that's part of the innovation game.
Absolutely.
Right?
So
some things are not going to work.
Yeah, we need to figure out how to make it work with partners, alone, in which way, with what technology, in what order, where do we start? We might have a vision, but how do we build towards it?
How do you stay motivated and resilient despite challenges, obstacles during this innovation journey? I mean, you've been part of the innovation journey. There's a big fight ahead still. How do you deal with this inevitable failure rate that comes with the innovation process?
I'd say, first of all, trust the process.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first thing.
Okay.
So you know it's going to fail, but eventually it's going to work. And you're not just doing the same thing over and over, hoping for a different result. You are learning from every single time something didn't quite work and optimizing the performance. So that's the first thing. Apply the process and trust the process, mm-hmm. first of all. Because there will be moments in which you will likely feel hopeless and tired and feel like this is not going to work out, but trust the process because eventually it will. And then the other thing I'd say is focus on what's best for the company. I think it's really powerful to see the power of the collective. When we're doing something for us, I think often that's something that we can get tired and say, well, I don't want it anymore, so I don't need to keep on focusing on this. And so that's limited. One of the things for me works is what's best for the company. At this moment, whenever I'm in a company, I am completely focused on the success of the company I'm in. And that means that if we're thinking about why we are innovating, why are we trying to find a different business model for us? We're doing this because a business needs us for growing, and not in the next 3 years, we're talking about 10, 30 years. A business needs us for sustainable development. And if we focus on why we are doing, we're not doing it for me because I'm curious about what happens if I experiment a different business model. We're doing this because the business right. will thrive with this. And this is something that will help you, but it's also a really helpful tool as a leader when you're talking to people who are frustrated in the process, when you say, we believe in this, the business deserves this, we need to help our customers and find different ways to reach out to them.
Yeah,
and that is something that gives you a higher purpose than just...
Right, so true.
And just focusing on yourself.
And one thing that people don't realize, I mean, especially if they're not in the financial sector, is how Cofidis Portugal is so innovative inside the Cofidis group, right? That's one thing. I mean, we talked about it during the productized talks as well, but people from France are coming here. People from Spain are coming here. That's quite uncommon, right? In most multinationals, you know, it's not like the Portuguese... branch is the most innovative of them all, and that seems to be the case here. And productivity of Cofidis Portugal is also quite high when measured in terms of the actual revenue per client and other financial metrics. Right? Close this conversation without asking you, what's your boldest objective for Cofidis Portugal inside a group, right? Because Cofidis is inside, it's not like, you know, it's a totally independent branch. It's inside a French group. It has its rules. It's backed by a big financial French group as well. So what do you really think it's going to be, that, you know, something really awesome out of the horizon for the next 3, 4, 5 years?
Well,
within these constraints
really,
we know, I mean, that they are there.
What really inspires me about working at Cofidis General, be it Cofidis Group or Cofidis Portugal, is the role that we play in people's lives. So our ability to impact people through their financial lives, I think that has a huge value. If you pause to think, there are not many things that have as much of an impact in our well-being as our financial life does. Our health and our financial life
True.
Are things that have a massive impact.
Impact, exactly.
And the fact that we can daily interact with people through their financial life and have the ability to impact the well-being of hundreds of thousands of customers through their financial life, that is something that moves me a lot. And it's completely aligned with our mission or our purpose as well as the company. But individually for me, that is something that moves me. So when I'm thinking about the next 3, 4, 5 years, next 10, 30 years, something that would make me really proud, and is something that I'm with the rest of the leaders of the organization, we're trying to inspire the organization, is how do we have more impact in our people's, in our customers' lives? How do we have an impact in the Portuguese market through people's financial lives? And that might mean going beyond beyond loans. So right now we're moving into insurance. Mm-hmm. Are there different ways to interact with people's life through loans? You've talked about one of them, which is talking about mobility. So right. How do we think about what job to be done there is to be fixed? It's not I want a loan, it's I want a car. But then when you have a car, you're managing so many things. How do you resolve that? So going beyond and thinking about the actual customer needs, for me, that is key. So the answer to your question about what is something that I really want to see us do as an organization, and what inspires me, and I hope inspires other people as well, yeah, is to be able to find more ways to have a deeper impact in people's life.
All right. And which books or people have significantly influenced yourself, your professional philosophy, or just the way you are today?
I'd use a book, I'd quote a book called Nonviolent Communication by Marshall Rosenberg. And that's a really powerful book because I think it's used normally more for interpersonal relationships, personal, professional, as a way to guide communication. And I think it's really useful for that. But it's also really useful for anyone who is trying to improve customer experience and improve and think about customer needs. What this book does is that it lays out a method and a really disciplined approach to identifying the differences between needs, emotions, outcomes, and solutions. So our language is really tricky. A normal statement that we'll use is, our customers feel like they're not supported. Mm-hmm. Feeling not supported is not an emotion.
Right.
Support is a need. Mm-hmm. So nonviolent communication talks you through more constructive ways to looking at a customer experience. And I've used it like that to really hone in on the craft of thinking about what is the actual need? What is the problem here? What is the emotion that we're passing? What is the emotion we want to pass? What's the desired outcome of this situation? And Nonviolent Communication by Marshall Rosenberg is, yes, a great book for interpersonal relationship building, but I think for any professional who wants to work through customer needs or user needs and understand them really and have an impact through differentiating between problems and solutions, this book is golden.
Yes, absolutely. I know you're also a fan of doodling with your iPad pencil, you know, an idea I took from you today, which is actually working great. So what apps are the ones that you cannot live without in your professional life?
So daily, I use GoodNotes and Notability with my iPad and my Apple Pencil. So GoodNotes, I choose for general note-taking. So my way of digesting the day, staying focused and reflecting is to constantly take notes. And GoodNotes, for me, has the best experience for that. The handwriting technology is fantastic. I feel like my handwriting is a lot more crisper. It's more beautiful to read. I feel more comfortable writing with it. So GoodNotes has my points for that. Notability is best for annotating PDFs. Mm. And with the iPad, one of the great things you can do is to screenshot a whole web page. So if you're reading an article online, you can just do a screenshot, not just of the section you're seeing, but the whole article.
The whole page,
pass it into Notability, and then there, underline, add notes, doodle, use different colors for highlighting. And actually, it's become a bit of a second brain. It's not where I want to have
a second brain on a huge Notion database that you have been building for the last few years, your knowledge base. Can you just dive into a little bit?
Yeah, so I use Notion mainly as my knowledge base, and I have two main databases in there. I have my knowledge vault and I have my knowledge lab. My knowledge vault is where I sync with Readwise, my Kindles, all my highlights go there. When I'm listening to a podcast, I'll share from Spotify straight onto there. Articles, I'll download them, link them sometimes to Notability. The workflow isn't perfect yet, but I do that as well. And I tag things, and it's really easy for me to find things that really resonated with me.
Right, so that's your knowledge vault.
That's my knowledge vault. My knowledge lab is where I reflect on what's on the knowledge vault.
Right.
So if I'm joining ideas around customer experience practice models and Marty Kagan's product operating model, my reflection of how those two work are in my knowledge lab.
Meta vault.
Yeah.
Where can people connect or learn more about your work or find you online? What is the best way to reach out?
Best way is LinkedIn.
Okay.
That's and the easiest way.
Do you answer people reaching out?
I do. Yeah. Okay. I mean, I don't have many contact requests. So at the moment, I'm able to respond to them. So feel free to reach out to me if you have any questions. I'm happy to help you. I'd be happy to help you reflect. Or if you've got something you'd like to bounce some ideas with me, I'd love to hear you guys and build on my reflections.
Do you believe in mentorship as a practice?
That's how I grow.
Yourself.
Absolutely. Myself. I mean, if I wouldn't have mentors and people
guide me. Are you doing it for
me,
others as well?
That as well. Yes. I mean, so in order to receive, you need to give too. Mm. And that's the basic process of principles around mentorship. So I deeply believe in the impact of mentorship because I've grown so much with really amazing mentors that I have accompanying me. But I've also help people out, think about their problems. And actually, that's how I ended up in Coffee Ease, was helping out Benjamin think through his customer experience challenges.
Okay.
So I wouldn't go as far to say as I'm a mentor of Benjamin, but just to show this bouncing of ideas, nerding out and geeking out about customer experience or all related topics, I'm happy to help people who are also thinking about their career and trying to develop in these fields.
Thank you so much. It's been very insightful having this discussion with you. I learned a lot, to be honest. So let me just tell our viewers and whoever is listening that Marta Oliveira will also be on the discussion panel at Productize Conference 2024. CX is the new product. That's, I think, the tentative name of the panel. And your experience and strategies are going to be super valuable to our audience, especially for those who want to improve the customer experience in their profession, in their companies, wherever they're working. Thank you so much, Marta.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely.